The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, last program of the week here on a chilly day in Edstone. A beautiful day, though, but we're right in the middle of the winter, so some colder weather, which we're used to. In any event, we have lots to get to on today's program. Kind of a similar theme, I think, that will run from beginning to end. I want to focus on America's foreign policy regarding the Middle East. Yesterday, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, he gave a speech in Cairo. It's hard to believe that we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of Barack Obama's infamous Cairo speech, where he basically surrendered to the King of the South, or maybe empowered the king of the South. We'll talk about that here more in just a bit. But maybe I can set it up with just some thoughts that revolve around what my father wrote in the Great Again booklet. As an American, it's certainly easier, I guess, to shine light on the sins of the radical left. They're just to point out their hypocrisy, the lawlessness, the hostility that they have toward America's founding, and then, of course, more recently here, their relentless assault against the president of the United States. And to be sure, God did intervene in 2016 to, as my father has explained, he intervened to prevent worse troubles from bringing down the United States even faster. So he did slow down the decline somewhat, but God did not stop the decline. America, we as Americans, we have not stopped this decline, and so it is important, even though it's very easy to key in on the sins of the radical left, it is important to step back and to look at the bigger picture. My father says in Great Again, the radical left is not our big problem. Ultimately, this isn't about a man or an administration. It's about an evil spirit being who is working to destroy this nation, and about why God is allowing it to happen. He makes this statement, God is not blessing America. He is cursing America. That's the big problem. And the reason curses are setting in, it's because of our sins. Now you look at that that prophecy in 2 Kings. This is the Jeroboam the second prophecy, 2 Kings 14. In verse 25, and it says about Jeroboam II that he restored the coast of Israel from the entering of Hamath unto the Sea of the Plain, according to the word of the eternal God of Israel, which he spoke by the hand of his servant Jonah. Jonah obviously is the prophet that went and took God's warning message to Nineveh. But that's not all that he did. Before that, he prophesied that Israel would expand its power, that Israel would regain some of the territory that it had lost to Syria, and that Israel would become quite prosperous. And there's a duality to this prophecy, as we know. My father wrote in the Saving America from the Radical Left, temporarily, he said, this is back in May of last year, he said Israel was still in a sinful state. Jeroboam II followed in the same rebellious traditions of the past. So it wasn't because of repentance or righteousness. It wasn't because of that they experienced this resurgence. Why, then, did God bless the nation in ways not seen since Solomon? Well, the verses explain, the verses that follow. Verse 26, it says, "For the Eternal saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Eternal said that he would not, he said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash." So Israel was right on the verge of collapse. And if God hadn't intervened, this satanic plot to blot out Israel, it would have happened right then. Going back to that article from last year, the May Trumpet magazine, my father says, God granted mercy when Israel really didn't deserve it. Rather than sending Israel into captivity at that time, God used this king to save Israel and to give them one more age of prosperity before Assyrian conquest. So it's important to note that God granted the mercy when Israel didn't really deserve it. And the same is true today. God has intervened to temporarily save Israel, but we don't deserve it. This does show just how merciful God is. And it also shows how important his work is, that this work gets done before all of these end-time prophecies are fully fulfilled. Now, I mentioned that Cairo speech, the one that Barack Obama gave almost 10 years ago. It was June 4th, 2009. Here we are now in 2019. And this was the speech. I'll play one clip from it here in just a minute. But this was the speech, you'll remember, where he defended Iran's pursuit of nuclear power. He said, there have been all of these atrocities in the past, but we're prepared to move on without any preconditions. I've made it clear to the Iranian mullahs. I've made it clear to the leaders that we're going to make peace with them. My father at the time, responding to that speech, he said, "How much did America's president help the terrorist cause?" He's actually helping the King of the South. He's helping the terrorists. He said, "President Obama's speech is a great turning point in this world. It's going to play a major role in terrifying prophecies of your Bible." Yes, indeed, it did empower and it did embolden Iran. And look at where we are today, and look at the Iranian influence as it has spread right across the region into Yemen and Lebanon and Syria and Iraq. Look at how much different the Middle East is today. Almost 10 years on from that speech, we know, of course, that it's building to the Daniel 1140 clash. The King of the South pushing at the King of the North. And the King of the North, that would be the European beast power, finally taking action. Never mind what some of the current leaders in Europe are saying or have said. When Europe gets its strong man, it's going to do more than just push back. It comes at the King of the South like a whirlwind, it says in Daniel 11:40. And as we've noted so many times before, of course, the United States is not mentioned in that prophecy. It's not even a player at that time. So Barack Obama gives that speech early on in his presidency, the first 6 months of his presidency. And then as it happens, here is the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. He's on a nine-nation tour throughout the Middle East. There's quite a few nations over there that are concerned, worried now. The United States is pulling troops out of Syria. They're pulling troops out of Afghanistan. And so the idea here is that Mr. Pompeo wants to set them at ease and tell them, look, it's different now. You can be sure it's different. We're not the Obama administration. This is a new administration. And this administration is very different from the previous one. We'll start with clip one here. This is Mike Pompeo yesterday at American University in Cairo.
Egypt has always been a land of striving. And yet, times your aspirations and those of your brethren in the Middle East have seemed impossible to achieve. These lands witnessed convulsions from Tunis to Tehran as old systems crumbled and new ones struggled to emerge. That's happened here too. And at this critical moment, America, your longtime friend, was absent too much. Why? Because our leaders gravely misread our history and your historical moment. These fundamental misunderstandings set forth in this city in 2009 adversely affected the lives of hundreds of millions of people in Egypt and all across the region. Remember, it was here in this city, that another American stood before you.
Wow, that's pretty strong. that's a direct reference, and there's nothing indirect about this. He's directly referring to that June 4th, 2009 Cairo speech by Barack Obama. That speech that lit the Middle East on fire. It did. That's the history. That's the history. That region exploded in violence following that Cairo speech. And of course, the final act of that new beginning, as Barack Obama called it, was to seal the deal on the Iranian nukes, to clear the way for them to build a nuclear weapon and to save them, basically, to save their economy, to throw them billions of dollars. Millions and millions of cash dollars. Well, all kinds of currencies with that pallet of cash they left on the tarmac. All of that happened in the last year of Barack Obama's presidency. But he made it clear from the beginning, Mr. Obama did. He made it clear from the beginning that America was prepared to do anything to get a peace deal similar to what Neville Chamberlain got back in the 1930s. Here's just one reminder of what was said back in 2009. This is clip two.
Rather than remain trapped in the past, I've made it clear to Iran's leaders and people that my country is prepared to move forward. The question now is not what Iran is against, but rather what future it wants to build. I recognize it will be hard to overcome decades of mistrust, but we will proceed with courage, rectitude, and resolve. There will be many issues to discuss between our two countries, and we are willing to move forward without preconditions on the basis of mutual respect.
Without any preconditions, and so they were talking. They were talking before he even came into power, before he even started his presidency. And then all throughout, they were talking before the so-called moderate came in 2013. And they were talking after that. And then they were creating narratives, false narratives, fiction, the Ben Rhodes narrative. And it all culminated in that deal. The worst foreign policy deal in American history, as my father said. But back in 2009, he was talking about this being a new beginning. We're going to forget the past, as you just heard there. We're starting over. And America can't, we're certainly not going to be judgmental. We can't pick and choose who's going to have nuclear power. Every nation has that right. That's what he said. Well, here's what Mike Pompeo said again yesterday in Cairo, clip three.
Remember, It was here, here in this city, that another American stood before you. He told you that radical Islamist terrorism does not stem from an ideology. He told you that he told you that 9/11 led my country to abandon its ideals, particularly in the Middle East. He told you that the United States and the Muslim world needed, quote, a new beginning, end of quote. The results of these misjudgments have been dire.
And that's absolutely true. This is an almost shockingly different tone taken by the United States of America. Here is the United States, at least now, able to identify the enemy. But the results of those misjudgments in 2009, they have been dire. It wasn't but a few days after the Obama speech in Cairo that you had the Green Revolution uprising, and the Obama administration just turned a blind eye to it as the Ayatollahs crushed that revolt. And then as that regime spread its cancerous influence, as Mr. Pompeo put it, on into Yemen, and then Iraq, Syria, still further into Lebanon, all over the region, and even into to Egypt as well. The King of the South, look at the power that it gained during the 8 years of the Obama administration. Mr. Pompeo went on to say this yesterday, clip four.
And our desire for peace at any cost led us to strike a deal with Iran, our common enemy. So today, what did we learn from all of this? We learned that when America retreats, chaos often follows. When we neglect our friends, resentment builds. And when we partner with our enemies, they advance. The good news is this. The age of self-inflicted American shame is over, and so are the policies that produce so much needless suffering. Now comes the real new beginning.
So that's Mike Pompeo giving his Cairo speech. That's the Donald Trump version of the Cairo speech yesterday. And he said there, we learned that from all of this dire history, these misjudgments, what have we learned? We learned that when America retreats, chaos often follows. Well, it's a great sounding speech, but when you look at what's happening on the ground, there's really not much difference. It's true that you can't blame Donald Trump for the disaster of the 8 years before his presidency. But you look at the United States today, and it is in retreat. The Atlantic, it had a piece yesterday in response to the Secretary of State's speech. And it says here, observers on both ends of the U.S. foreign policy spectrum saw parallels in Obama's and Trump's views on the hard limits to expending American blood and treasure in the Middle East. As Obama's former Mideast advisor, Philip Gordon, told me, Trump, in a sense, represents not a repudiation of Obama, but a doubling down of Obama. Now, that's a former Obama advisor, and keep in mind, this is The Atlantic. But it still does bring out some good points. There's no question that the big difference between these two administrations is that the Obama administration saw Iran as a friend, and the Trump administration sees it as an enemy. But that said, leave that aside and consider again what is happening on the ground. Here is Secretary Pompeo traveling through these nine nations in the Middle East and trying to set them at ease and trying to explain to them, this is why we're leaving. The Atlantic says, just a few weeks ago, President Trump blindsided those allies by announcing plans to yank troops out of Syria and leave others to mop up what remains of the Islamic State, noting that the Iranians could, quote, do what they want in the country, and that it was time for the United States to terminate its endless wars and to come home and to rebuild. Those are all quotes from some of the president's tweets. The Atlantic says in another sign that the president isn't exactly preoccupied with reasserting the United States' traditional role in the Middle East. There's no U.S. ambassador in more than half of the countries Pompeo is visiting on this trip, including Egypt. So there certainly is a different message now. There certainly is a different tone. You look at the two speeches, and they couldn't be more different. There's such a stark contrast. But when you step back and you look at the big picture and you consider what God has prophesied, there really is not that much difference. Here's one final clip from Mr. Pompeo yesterday, clip 5.
Let's turn to Iran. President Trump has reversed our willful blindness to the danger of the regime and withdrew from the failed nuclear deal with its false promises. The U.S. reimposed sanctions that should never have been lifted. We embarked on a new pressure campaign to cut off the revenues the regime uses to spread terror and destruction throughout the world. We joined the Iranian people in calling for freedom and accountability. And importantly, we fostered a common understanding with our allies of the need to counteract the Iran regime's revolutionary agenda.
And the administration should be congratulated for those steps that have been taken. But remember what the prophecies say, and consider what's actually happening on the ground in Syria, in Afghanistan. America is pulling out. It's just like what the Atlantic quoted. That's direct from the president himself the other day. The Iranians, I don't really care. They can do what they want there in Syria. It's time for us to terminate these endless wars, says the current president, and come home and rebuild. We need to build up our home. We need to withdraw to our country. We need to build a wall around it and focus on what's happening inside of our own nation. And it's hard to fault him for taking that as his approach. You think about great again, the point that my father makes about this administration fighting for many good causes, standing up for good causes. A lot of what was said yesterday sounded pretty good. But as my father wrote, in the process of standing for those good causes, it says Jeroboam gets people to look to him as the solution, not the omnipotent, all-powerful God. That's what I was thinking about when listening to Mr. Pompeo's speech this morning, or at least listening to some of the clips. It really is about looking to President Trump. Don't you worry. Look at all these mistakes from 2009 on. Now I'm here to tell you, don't worry. Everything's right back to normal. It's back to the way that it always was. America's going to have a strong presence in the Middle East. But is it? Is it going to return to the way that it once was? Is this mess, is it going to be cleaned up? Is it going to be fixed? Is what's broken in the Middle East, will it be fixed? And then consider, as I say, it's hard to fault the approach of dealing with some of the sicknesses at home. But consider those sicknesses. My father wrote in Great Again, America is being attacked from within and without. There are failures everywhere, economically, culturally, politically, militarily, morally. Anyone who says there isn't a real problem here needs to open his eyes. We need to see what's happening to our nation. There's problems all over the place, and they're not going away. They're worsening. What better metaphor do we have for the United States at large than the so-called government shutdown, the partial shutdown? But still, look at it's a standoff. And there's no solution in sight. Half the country wants a wall, the other half doesn't want a wall, or at least doesn't want President Trump to get a victory. And you can't change the mind of either side. Both sides are convinced. They're digging in their heels. President Trump said, I think yesterday, that it's easier to work with leaders that aren't concerned about America's best interests than it is to work with Democrats, the radical left. The radical left has its many sins. There's no doubt about that. But what does God say about the real problem that we're facing, the biggest problem that we're facing? We'll get into that when we come back. We'll look at some of those prophecies that I referred to. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, the CNN reporter Christiane Amanpour, she was talking to Chuck Hagel. He was the defense secretary for the Obama administration. And she brought up the subject of Syria and what was happening in 2012 and 2013, and how different it could have been had the Obama administration acted. He had the red line, but remember, he didn't do anything about it. And so here was the CNN reporter asking Mr. Hagel about that history, and here was his response. Clip six.
Yes, it was a mistake. I think it was a big mistake. I think it was the biggest foreign policy mistake of the Obama administration. We met for many months on this and had a decision agreed to, which the president had ordered a strike, and then pulled it down. I think when we did that, that signaled to Russia and other nations that. First of all, the president of the United States' word is no good, and that's always dangerous. But that signal to the Russians, you can have Syria. And it was dangerous. And matter of fact, when I left the Pentagon in February 2015, One of the differences I had with the administration was over Syria. I'd written a memo, which the New York Times got a hold of, a memo to Kerry and Susan Rice and others in the administration saying, we don't have a clear Syrian policy. I was being hammered on it by our NATO allies, by our Middle East allies. What is your policy? What are you going to do? What are you trying to do? We just didn't have one. So you're right. I think it was a fundamental mistake.
Now, we didn't hear that at the time, of course. The media did everything possible to cover for Barack Obama. But the truth of it is, as the defense secretary at the time now says, it was a horrible mistake. We didn't even have a Syrian policy. No Syrian policy. And he said there that it showed that the word of the president of the United States, it was no good. This was Obama basically saying to Russia, you can have Syria. Now, that's the history. That's the history. You have to keep that in mind, too, when you look at the mistakes of the current administration with respect to the Middle East. This article in Tablet magazine brings up some of this history, saying here that President Trump's pullout, speaking of Syria, his pullout represents not a new direction in foreign affairs, but a course coda, or in other words, a final act to a decade of institutional error that we need to understand before we can repair. This is just the last act. Keep in mind the prophecies. Looking to Jeroboam the man, it's not going to save America, not permanently. God can intervene. God can save us temporarily. But he's not doing that because we've repented, not at all. So you look at this history. Here's the final act of the last 10 years. It says here, keeping or leaving the troops made absolutely no difference in the bigger scheme. He's talking about those 3,000-4,000 troops that are there. Now, I think it does make somewhat of a difference, a pretty big difference, as we've covered on this program previously. But he does a good job here of stepping back and looking at the bigger picture. He says it made no difference for a simple reason. The chips had already fallen between 2009 and 2015 when the Obama administration executed its post-Bush pivot toward Iran and its regional proxy, Syria, and away from America's allies in the region for 30 years, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, and Israel. This is the situation Trump inherited, and Mr. Trump is not a fixer. He's not looking to fix what's broken there. That's not his approach. If he had a slogan for Syria, it would be, it's yours. I'm leaving. This author here says, it's not a pivot. It's an epitaph. He doesn't know how to fix our crises, and he doesn't care. This is someone who's not much of a fan of the president. But just try to leave that aside and listen to some of the points made here. He's talking about his reaction, or it's being, his purpose is reactionary, to call the crises what they are and to point a finger at the people who made them this way. Now, think again about that quote from Great Again. He does do a pretty good job, as my father has said before, about identifying the problems. And so here he is pointing the finger. Look, this is a problem. This is a mess. I've inherited this. And Barack Obama caused it. And he's right about those things. You heard Secretary Pompeo yesterday. Or those clips I played from yesterday in the first segment. Pointing out all of the dire events, consequences. Coming from that Cairo speech. Well, this Tablet article, it talks about the uproar over the president's announcement on Twitter that he's going to pull the troops, what remains in Syria, that he's going to pull them out. And then that led to the resignations, James Mattis and Brett McGurk. And these were key advisors regarding the Syrian policy. And he goes and gives, again, some important history, some context. He points out that McGurk is a career diplomat and that President Obama is the one who appointed him, the deputy assistant secretary of state for Iraq and Iran. That's what was his responsibility during the Obama years. So he was right in there with all that that administration was doing to do that deal with Iran. And then Mattis, for his part, it says here, the head of the United States Central Command under Obama and Secretary of Defense under Trump was slightly more hawkish than Obama, but still an institutionalist who saw his role in the Trump era as preserving the status quo. The status quo left over from Obama was to sweep the surfaces, avoid a confrontation with Iran, which supported Assad, and make space for Iran's ally, Russia, which also supported Assad, to tamp down the Syrian civil war, to root out the obviously disruptive regional actor ISIS, and to keep the peace. That was basically what American troops were there to do, he says. Okay, fight against ISIS, stamp out the ISIS threat. But then, besides that, just pretty much maintain the status quo. Let Iran have its way. Make room for Russia. Those 3,000-4,000 troops, they weren't fighting Russians. They weren't prepared to drive Iran out. Their influence is still as strong as ever, right? Look at what's happening on the ground. It says, all of this is what McGurk helped design under Obama and Mattis acquiesced to under Trump. And the results are both tragic and frightening. 500,000 Syrians, 500,000 Syrians have been killed. 5 million made refugees within the country, and 6 million outside it. Beirut remains a party town, but is governed by a Shia militia. A threatened Saudi Arabia wages a costly war in Yemen against Iran's proxies. There that has put 8 million people at risk of starvation. Iran is not only a murderous tyranny on the cusp of nuclear weapons, but now also the key regional mover. And Iran's and Syria's patron, Russia, our avowed enemy, has extended its influence. These are not consequences that 2,000 to 4,000 American troops had any hope of ameliorating, which is to say, they're not consequences that Trump's withdrawal decision had any effect on at all. It's a good point. It's an excellent point. They're the consequences of 10 years of missteps, which turn on a single origin point, Obama's post-Bush foreign policy fantasy that we could right all wrongs in the region, that turns on fierce interstate competition by pacifying Iran, its most ruthless state competitor. That's what it all turns on. 10 years of missteps. The origin point, well, you go back to this massive pivot that Obama took in his first year, the first year of his presidency, the New Beginning speech. And it culminated in the nuclear deal, January 16th, 2016. This tablet author says none of this is being talked about and it's probably not going to be discussed. The partisan charade, that's what it is. It's just going to intensify. He says, as Trump's clumsy withdrawal gives his enemies an excuse to pounce, he says further on, finally, we need to push back against all this obscuring, for as we argue around each other, Iran maneuvers with ever more impunity. ISIS cells plot their regrowth. Assad, to whom we have given a complete victory, persists in his despotic vocation, maybe the first genocidal killer in half a century that America has chosen to forget committed genocide. And Russia, a threat at home and abroad, gains proxies up to the Mediterranean. In other words, the more things change, the more they stay the same. A very, very different speech yesterday in Cairo compared to the one on June 4th, 2009. But 10 years of missteps, that's what we've seen. God is not solving these problems. The Jeroboam administration is not solving these problems. Far from it. And then you consider the prophecies. So there's a temporary resurgence, and God's work can be very grateful for that. But in Ezekiel 5, God says, I, even I, am against you. That still stands. I'm against you, and will execute judgments in the midst of you, in the sight of the nations. He says in verse 9, Ezekiel 5, 9, and I will do in you that which I have not done, and whereunto I will not do any more the like, because of all your abominations. That's what it gets back to. Our many sins, our transgressions. Think about those prophecies in Leviticus 26. We refer to it often. We haven't read through it in quite a while. Let me just give you a few verses from Leviticus 26. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, really goes into this in detail in the United States and Britain in prophecy. But God says here in verse 3, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then, and what follows, Moses writes about all of these blessings. If you keep my commandments, if you're obedient, then you'll come upon all of these blessings. In the U.S. and Britain book, it says in this central prophecy, God reaffirmed the birthright promise, but with conditions. For those of Moses' day, the birthright tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh were then with the other tribes as one nation. Obedience to God's laws would bring the vast national wealth and blessings of the birthright, not only to Ephraim and Manasseh, but to the whole nation. The whole nation would automatically have shared them at that time. Well, I don't have time to get into the prophecy about the 2,520 years, the delay. They were made. These promises were made to Abraham unconditionally. But with ancient Israel, there were conditions. In our time, starting in the early 1800s, up through to about the middle of the 20th century, God fulfilled his promise to Abraham and showered upon our peoples blessings of prosperity and power, the United States and Britain in particular, the birthright blessings. God promised, and he delivered. But as Mr. Armstrong brings out in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, once God gave us those promised blessings, then it was on us to keep them. And we have squandered them away. And we are saturated in sin. And so those blessings are being withdrawn. They're turning to curses. Verse 14 says, but if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague that shall consume the eyes and shall cause sorrow of heart. It says, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. And then in verses 17 and 18, we're familiar with these verses. It says, and I will set my face against you. That's God, just like in Ezekiel 5, saying, I'm against you. I am against you. It says, and if you will not yet for all this hearken unto me, then I'll punish you seven times more for your sins. And verse 19, I will break the pride of your power. I read that article from, I forget where, but last week about losing the war in Afghanistan and how much power the Taliban has regained after some 18, 19 years in the so-called war against terrorism. Defeat in Afghanistan, defeat and withdrawal in Iraq. Now Syria, all of that shed blood. Trillions of dollars spent. And just like verse 20 brings out, your strength shall be spent in vain. For your land shall not yield her increase. All of that strength, all of that power, it's spent in vain. And here we come to the Jeroboam administration saying, look, this is a mess. You fix it. We're leaving. America in retreat. And so you step back. You see all this history through Antiochus on through to Jeroboam, and you look at the real problem that we're facing. There is a devil. He is the God of this world. You see his fingerprints on all of these events, no doubt about it. But then we have to look at our own sins as well. In America Under Attack, my father asks why God would allow all these things to happen. All these prophecies, all these tragedies, all these atrocities. And he points us to Daniel 8 in verse 12, where it says, by reason of transgression, that's how the truth is cast to the ground. That's how the church, God's church, was destroyed following the death of Herbert Armstrong. It was because of transgression. By reason of transgression, the sins of the people, the sins of our people, and you can apply this to spiritual Israel, the church, but also to our own nations, the nations of Israel, the United States and Britain in particular. It's the sins of the people that give Satan the opening that he needs to get in there and to be so disruptive, to do all of his dirty work. And so you can't look at Antiochus, you can't look at the radical left and blame it all on them. If we want to look at who to blame, we have to look at ourselves. Our people, as my father writes, our people are saturated in sin and lawbreaking of every imaginable type. And we're proud of it. And so God's punishing us. Look at our people. There was a story in the Federalist today about this documentary by Peter Jackson. Modernized it, updated it, I guess added color and made, digitized it so that it doesn't have that herky-jerky feel. And people who have seen it, I haven't seen it yet, but people who have seen it say it just brings it to life. And you see the ruggedness of these young men, these Brits and Americans in the trenches. And you see the courage. You see how tough they were. This Federalist piece, it says, we sleep soundly in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm. Winston Churchill reportedly said, it's those rough men that stand ready to protect us, to ensure our liberty, our freedom. The Federalist says, regarding Churchill's comment, he knew a thing or two about combat as a young man, and as the leader of a great nation, about facing annihilation as an old man. It says, if Winston could only see us now, the contrast between those young people today who stand ready to protect us and those we protect has perhaps never been more stark. And then it just talks about all the nonsense going on universities, looking after the little snowflakes to make sure that they're not offended. One course at an American university saying it's okay to fail sometimes. You're still a good person. The journal reports that many colleges, including elites like Princeton and Vanderbilt, are offering workshops with vignettes showing students and staff discussing their failures and moments of self-doubt. Not so much toughness, not so much strength and fortitude today. It says at the end of this article, in the span of 100 years, think about this with respect to our sins, being saturated in sin. It says in the span of 100 years, Britain has gone from producing men who were so eager to fight and die for their country that 16-year-olds lied about their age to enlist when the minimum age was 19, to teaching primary school boys that they can have periods just like girls and offering feminine hygiene products in boys' bathrooms. It says this phenomenon isn't unique to the UK. US colleges like the University of Wisconsin, University of Minnesota, and Brown University offer menstrual products in their men's rooms in the name of menstrual equity. It says, can any culture, British, American, or any other, raise rough men ready to defend it against a ruthless enemy when it cannot even fix the minds of its developing youth what their sex is? What would Winston say? What would Winston Churchill say today? We were talking in our editorial meeting this morning. It was Richard who pointed out, I think it's Andrew Roberts in his book, Masters and Commanders, who just talked about the soldiers of World War II. And this is a war that the United States and Britain won, barely. But it talked about how that the real fighting soldiers back then, they were the Germans. They were the tougher warriors. And that was just in World War II. The difference between World Wars I and II, that was stark. But look at where we are today. We were able to overwhelm them with just an incredible amount of firepower there at the end of World War II. But are we prepared for a worldwide conflagration? Are we prepared for world war? Are we prepared for great tribulation? I spoke yesterday about what's happening in Europe between France and Germany. There was an article at Handelsblatt today, the German publication, by Ursula von der Leyen. She's the, I think, the German defense minister. But she's quoting in the beginning of her op-ed from a guy named Wolfgang Clement, who said, I guess, in a newspaper earlier this week that Europe needs an army. We need an army. Look at this world. We need an army. The European Union does. And von der Leyen, she's the German defense minister, and she comes out in Handelsblatt today and says, look, we have one. It's in the process of being built. Don't worry. You commentators that keep urging us to do it, look around now. It's beginning to happen. And so here is Europe. I played you that clip yesterday from Mr. Armstrong. Here is Europe. It's preparing itself for war. This world needs to be warned with a message from some of the prophets of old, Ezekiel, as I read earlier, Moses. Look at the prophet Amos, Amos 7. My father spends a fair bit of time on this passage in Great Again. This conflict between Amaziah and God's prophet. Amaziah says, Amos, he goes to Jeroboam, and he says, Amos says, Jeroboam shall die by the sword, and Israel shall surely be led away captive out of their own land. Trying to blame it on Amos. He's that old Jeremiah. He's the prophet of doom and gloom. He's the problem. That's how it's presented there in Amos chapter 7. But as my father brings out, what our peoples need to know and hear is that this is a thus saith the Lord message. It's a thus saith the Lord warning. It's not coming from Amos, the prophet. It's coming from God. Great again says this, America has different messages coming from Republicans and Democrats. You can argue all the day long until you're blue in the face. Who's right? Who's right about this? Who's right about that? There's a deep divide between the political parties in America, in the UK. There's no doubt about that. He says America has different messages coming from Republicans and Democrats, but the only message that will prevail is, thus saith the Lord. Nothing else will succeed. He says the world must understand that. That's what we want to be focused on in these trying times that we're entering into. Thus saith the Lord. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program this weekend, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.